Hey everybody, Roger here. With Shofu busy uploading his Pokemon videos and Ricky out of town for the time being, I just wanted to preface this episode with the fact that we don't cover the past couple weeks of Miiverse photos this week. That shouldn't be a huge problem, since the only things of note over the past couple weeks have been the Xerneas Pokeball slash stage hazard confirmation, and Sakurai's hint that the Sonic stage that's been revealed may be something more, maybe an adventure mode stage or something like that. Good news is that we managed to grab Prague for a special full-length discussion on the recent Smash Brothers documentary and Project M updates. So we'll be back in 2 weeks with our regular programming schedule of Miiverse pictures and listener questions. But without further ado, I now present to you Japan Time Episode 10 as it happened live on Twitch. Enjoy! We're starting right now, whenever you guys are ready to start.
I've been ready.
We're waiting for you.
All right. We're ready. Oh, for me? I'm ready. Are you recording? Show? Oh my god, that face.
Can we just take the stream audio when it's done?
If you want. Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, do you want to do that? Can you edit from the stream audio?
Yeah.
All right, cool. That's what we'll do then. All right, then. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the second segment, or what will be the second segment when you are listening to this, of Japan Time Episode 10. We are now in double digits. For those of you who are just joining us right now, we are live on my Twitch channel. I'm your host, the lovable Roger DiLuigi, and this week I am joined by Shofu.
Hi.
The real Zeph, of course.
Hello.
Excuse me? You got a little more enthusiasm, Mr. Zeph.
I can't.
Of course you can. All right, whatever. Of course you can. And then, Coast, you got Coast
here
this week.
Stop.
Okay.
I already kill that my man. Decision. I'm gonna kill this man.
Don't be a hater on your life, Shofu.
Excuse me? We gotta introduce our special guest. The one and only, Mr. Prague.
I just spilled ketchup all over myself.
Not that at all. Nice and clean.
Right, so the reason Prague's here, and you guys are probably wondering, whoa, you guys got Prague? This is crazy. So he's here to talk about something very specific, which is, and some of you may be aware of this, the Smash Brothers documentary.
Wait, so, I thought I was talking about adopting actually animals from actual shelters, not puppy farms.
Space animals.
Could you go into that, I guess, a little bit? Because we'd love to hear about it.
Well, you know, puppy farms are really not the way to go when it comes to adopting animals. There are a lot of good dogs out there that just need lovable... Wait, what are we talking about? Something like that, right?
Talking about the documentary.
Okay, cool.
So, Prague, go ahead, sort of describe for the listeners who maybe aren't aware of it so far, what's the Smash Brothers documentary, who's behind it, what do you have to do with it, and just go to talk about it a little bit.
All right, so instead of puppy farms, we're going to talk about the efforts of one person who in the Smash community is known as Samox, real name Travis Beauchamp, and he runs his own production company called East Point Pictures. Actually, if you go to youtube.com, search for East Point Pictures, you will see a 9-part documentary series entitled The Smash Brothers, which started out as going to be an 8-parter, if that, about the game of Super Smash Brothers Melee, the competitive scene throughout all of the various eras. And Travis actually was a one-man band for all of this. He was the cameraman, lights, sound, audio, editing, quit his job, was working 14 hours a day on it, all done through a Kickstarter, and he got a lot of support from the community because, again, he quit his job. And it's been coming to fruition as it was released 2 weeks ago. It's 9 parts again, it's episodic. First episode has about 200,000 views at this point, and we're hoping that a lot more people decide to stick through the entire journey, just as the people in the community have. For all these years.
I just noticed thing too about the Smash Brothers documentary in terms of like the wide range of appeal of it is I've seen that posted not only on these streams of a lot of different people who are in the Smash community, but also a lot of Treehouse employees, a lot of localization companies of different video games, and even like celebrities have been tweeting about that Smash Brothers documentary. Lucas Neff, who does Raising Hope, was watching it earlier. And he tweeted about it. There's been a lot of people, honestly, who've been talking about it, and it's really cool to see sort of Smash. I know it's talked about it in the actual doc, but to sort of see it evolve from just this game that people were, you know,
having tournaments in their basement and inviting their friends over and then staying overnight to play Smash Brothers until 6 in the morning, you know, into this thing that I think a lot of people have come to respect as a sport.
Yeah. First, when you talk about just the number of people that have been intrigued by it, I'm still here, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I heard someone disconnect, so I thought it was me, and I was going to freak out. All right, it's not my fault. Cool. But yeah, I mean, just the number of people that have tweeted about and shown support. Bill Trinan from Nintendo retweeted it.
Yep.
We've had Scara. We've had, for all your League of Legends fans, a good friend of mine, Alex Penn, who actually is a coach for Cloud9, has been raving about. We've had a lot of Dota players. Basically, anyone that plays a game competitively has raved about it. Alex Vai from the fighting game community. Because they all understand, you know, what that competitive drive is, and especially the formation of any community, they can understand, they can sympathize and empathize with. And then just constantly hearing about how fantastic it's been from all those people, it's been certainly an eye-opener for a lot of people who we feel like Smash is this really, really insular community, and to some degree it really is. But at the same time, things like this certainly expose that we have our own history, and we are a lot more widespread than people expect.
Another thing I noticed too about not just the documentary but about the community in general is that it's probably the most welcoming of any fighting game currently on any circuit. Like, you can be playing Smash Brothers at a small town tournament and be playing against like the best guy in the world. Like, you could just randomly go to a tournament, run into Mewtwo King, and then suddenly, you know, and suddenly you'd probably get destroyed. But, I mean, definitely, you still have that one-to-one experience. Like, I don't know of any other fighting game where you could sort of do that, where you can connect with them on such a personal level. And then everyone's so welcoming. You'll see the guy who placed 8th at a tournament, you know, having dinner with the guy who placed 64th, with the guy who placed 1st, you know?
Yeah.
And everyone's talking as if they're on the same level.
It's the thing about the Smash community that makes it different from a lot of different fighting game communities is just where we come from. We are not from the arcade scene. We aren't from that whole mindset of, okay, this is my last quarter of the day, I have to win or else I'm going home, I can't play again. We had to go to each other's houses. We had to invite people over for dinner and stuff to get our scenes going. We started out in this kind of family atmosphere. Not saying that other games don't have that atmosphere, but that's where we came from. That's what we were born out of, and it's something that certainly still continues to this day. What you're talking about, you know, playing the guy who placed first. One of my first tournaments, actually, I was playing Doc Dittos with some guy. So it was his first tournament, and I said, okay, it actually was like my first or second. It's like, oh, yeah, we'll play some friendlies, and he proceeds to four-stock me, destroys me, wasn't pretty at all. It's like, oh, yeah, by the way, my name is Mewtwo King, I lied to you. And by that point, you know, I had been, I'd been seeing him on, the DC++ hub, and, you know, I knew him as a player, but not as a person. And I think that's one thing that the documentary did really well, was you got to figure out a lot of these players and who they are beyond the game, especially with certain episodes like Isaiah, like Mango.
Isaiah's was beautiful and heartbreaking and inspiring, like everything all in once. I love that. Was by far my favorite episode. Like, just getting that insight, especially because Isaiah's always sort of had this like shroud of mystery around him. People who have like been following the game, or you know, people who compete and you want to know a little bit more about him. I don't think we've ever had like as much insight on him as this documentary provided us with. It was
Isaiah
fantastic.
Certainly is like a kind of a Bigfoot figure in the Smash community, because he may or may not exist at this point, but everyone's concerned. Everyone wants to see him, and I think the documentary definitely exposed a lot more of him than we were expecting. And I feel like that was a great trend because, I mean, me personally, I've met all the individuals in the documentary. I've commentated matches for nearly, I think, everyone except for Ozzy at this point. And it's fascinating knowing them all as people, but as players, it's completely different.
Oh my God, absolutely. Look at KDJ. That was another one that I was like completely blindsided. I had known sort of about his rise, but I didn't realize that he started playing. So this is something you guys will find out when you watch the documentary. But the episode on a Korean DJ is fascinating. The way how he basically, to get into the community, said, okay, I'm going to play Money Matches with all the best people, and I know I'm going to lose this money. I know I'm going to lose these matches. But by doing a money match, he sort of coaxed out of the shadows, like he used the money as bait to sort of be able to understand how everyone plays the game, you know, what were their techniques, how to counter them. It was brilliant. It was a great tactic, and I think it ended up serving him really well.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same thing with what a lot of people do now. You know, they go to a tournament and they know that they're not going to perform well, but they're entering just to get the exposure, get used to that, those tournament nerves and mindset. It's, you have to pay your dues, and KDJ paid them literally. And we see how great he did doing that. But again, going back to the documentary, so Sandbox did it all. And this was a collection of footage, basically, over the past 2 or 3 years. The guy was extremely dedicated, rarely went to events, just because he wanted to put out something that was fantastic, and all the reviews definitely say it certainly does fall into that category. And in addition, the last episode, I'm not going to spoil it, he wanted to go to that event, and he couldn't just because of how deeply entrenched he was with that documentary. He had the money and everything, but he knew his time better spent editing. So he actually had a lot of people sending him footage of things from that event. Even, you know, myself, like I had Facebook pictures that were included at some point, but it was just really, really fascinating to see him put that together with extremely little source footage. I mean, anyone that works in television can tell you, if you don't have solid source footage, you might as well reshoot it or do whatever you can to get some. And he was able to make a solid cake out of like the last bits of flour. And you'll see, I think that one thing that's really interesting is, of course you're seeing the players, but just how far the technology in the game has come. You'll see a couple of early video camera shots, and then coming to current day modern streams, I think for a game that's 12 years old, it's a really, really great juxtaposition.
I remember the video footage of East versus West, the first, like the, I think it was number 2, if I'm not mistaken. That was some of the coolest stuff, like seeing everyone sort of in their prime and seeing them so young, and that was one of the coolest moments, I think, of the whole series.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's kind of scary, you know, that so many of these people have been playing for so long. I mean, I'll put myself in the 06 camp, but it's like still seeing guys like M2K still playing, still performing really well. Seeing Ken over the summer trying to defend his title for something that he won 6 years ago, even though he's been inactive for so long. It's really fascinating. And I think the documentary did really encapsulate that really well.
That's so funny you talked about Ken, because actually we had you on episode 3 when we were talking about when Evo was going on, and seeing that Ken match, like without spoiling anything, seeing that Ken match at Evo this year was incredible. Like seeing this guy who you sort of saw as a legend, at least for me and a lot of people sort of like from my class, who were you know, the younger group of Smash players, to see him sort of like out in the open and to be revealed to everyone who was at Evo, I think it was fascinating. It was
really definitely. Really.
So
I mean,
all right, well,
again, you know, Ken was one of those guys that was he disappeared for a while. You know, he went on Survivor. We thought we were never going to see him again. And then for a lot of people that came in, like I'd say now it's kind of middle school of the game at this point. Just having the opportunity to meet him and see him when this is a guy that we've all venerated for so long, it was just really, really, it was special. And I hope we can capture that moment again at some point.
Who was it he played those matches with? I think it was a best of 10. Was it with Mewtwo King?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was great to see them playing again in the year 2013. But I mean, also, you know, we had a lot of dream matches, and one of them, I guess, I talked about a bit in the documentary, I'm not gonna mention it just so you guys can watch episode 3, but definitely check it out when you have a chance. Again, youtube.com, search for East Point Pictures. And if you want to follow Samox on Twitter, because he is doing updates, and because this all started via Kickstarter, I know he said that he actually does want to do more episodes. It's just a matter of funding, if he can get it. So his Twitter is _SAMOX_. So definitely let him know what you think of the documentary. And definitely thank him, because he put in a lot more effort than a lot of people would expect.
And I know a lot of people who are hesitant about Kickstarter, but I feel like this is one that I would absolutely back.
Yeah.
Like, more episodes. This is something like this and Mighty No. 9, I think, are the two things in history I will ever go in and give money to a Kickstarter.
I just feel more biased, that's all.
Yeah. Zeph, we hardly even heard from you. What did you think of the documentary? Like, what were your favorite episodes? What were some moments that really, like, stood out for you?
Isaiah's episode, obviously, because everybody loves Isaiah's episode. But it showed, like, how relatable Isaiah is as a person. And that he was more than just, like, that great player that... I kind of see him as, like, the face of Captain Falcon now, more so than Scar was, but...
I do too after that episode too.
It's always been that way for me, but I haven't seen much of him. So it was nice seeing that episode.
Like, I feel like Isaiah and Dark Reign were the two big Falcons of that era.
Yeah.
Isaiah coming a bit before. But Dark Reign, you know, I mean, of course you have the newer generation. We have guys like Hax, S2J, Sound Spectre. But it's always going to be Isaiah for so many Falcon players, just because a lot of the stuff that he does, that he did back in, you know, 05, 06, 07, Falcon players are just now starting to implement it. And it's mostly just hacks. So I think just watching him as a player is fantastic. But getting to see someone that we venerate having the same issues that every person has, it's just really, really... It's really, really humanizing, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I think, like, in a word, if I was to describe the documentary, I would definitely say humanizing, because it's sort of giving a face and a personality to all these people who we've sort of seen as, like, legends in the community, you know?
Oh, definitely.
To finally see how they are and how they act, and, yeah, it's been really, really cool. So, wait, Shofu, are you still there?
I've
seen people in the stream being like, Shofu.
He's here. He's changing his picture.
I'm here. Look, I'm completely ignorant to the document. I know about it, but I haven't seen it or anything, so I don't really have any input right now.
See, that's the perfect then. Prog, it's good we had you on, because that's the perfect plug to have people who are listening to the podcast who, like Shofu, haven't seen it yet.
I definitely implore you to see it and check it out when you have a chance.
Sure. Well, while you're here, so we can still hold on to you for a little bit, let's talk about Project M. Let's talk about that thing that we were talking about earlier on the stream. That, of course, none of us know anything about Project M.
Oh, no, I have no idea what Project M actually
is. We don't know who works on it and how to, who promotes it.
How do you even download it?
Do you and Zeph sort of want to go into, like, the details and new updates and things that you've noticed and the new changes? Yeah, go ahead.
So, actually, I'm at a friend's house right now. They're playing Brawl, and some things don't change. Brawl is one of them. It's still really, really... slow as I'm watching it right now. And, you know, personally as a player, I'm more of an aggressive player. I thrive on offense, mix-ups. If you have my back against the wall, that's when I, as I hear shine, the background. When my back is against the wall, I don't perform really well. And I've always put an offensive-minded player in every fight I've played ever since I started with Virtua Fighter. And Brawl really didn't mesh with me very well, because it rewarded defensive gameplay and offensive play. Offensive play actually was a hindrance to that game. What PM basically is, for those of you that are unaware, is PM is... It's kind of this amalgam of Melee and Brawl, where you're taking the Brawl roster, and now a couple of other characters we'll talk about later on, and you are kind of modifying the Brawl engine to make it closer to Melee. It's not Melee, it's not Brawl, it's this amalgam. I think that's what makes it really, really special.
Yeah.
It's its own game, really. It's what it is.
That's why it's its own game. There are a lot of melee purists who say, you know, PM is garbage, and I'm just like, because you're putting it, you're comparing it to this game. And of course, you know, you always compare games to other in the series, but sometimes it's not the time or place to do that. I think PM is one of those projects because, again, it is all crowdsourced. It's a bunch of individuals in the Smash community who are trying to make Brawl something a bit more like Melee, trying to make the sequel to Melee that I think a lot of people want and expected. Mm. I guess that's my PM plug right now. Do you want to go into it a bit more?
Yeah. I don't know how to say this. I think Project M, if Project M was what Brawl is, I think the Melee scene wouldn't exist as much as it does now. I think it would definitely take over. Recently, Mewtwo King was on a stream with the new two characters, and he says things a lot, but what he said this time was, this game is, to quote him exactly how he said, this game is, like, better. And I can see what he means, because it's a fresh game, and as much as I love Melee, I can't keep playing with the same eight characters every match. And
right.
The fact that there are professional Melee players in the back room that give insight, that help balance the game and provide us with patches, which Melee obviously didn't offer.
They offered patches, just you had to buy a different region of the game.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, like, but I think Project M is as good or a little better, or could be a little better than Melee.
I mean, one thing that I find extremely phenomenal about PM is the amount of character diversity.
Yeah.
There's character specialists for every character, and sure, there are in Brawl, there are in Melee, but not to the same degree. But I think that's because of the balancing.
I love that I'm able to take on people as Donkey Kong. Like, legitimately take on people as Donkey Kong. Because I know that, in Brawl, and of course, Brawl is not the most competitive game, especially compared to Melee, but Donkey Kong versus, like, a Meta Knight, for example, is just something that's not going to happen. That's, like, what tiers sort of exist for. It's like, if two people of the same plane were playing with two different characters, you know, who would win every time? Like, 10 times out of 10, it'd be Meta Knight over DK, you know. Whereas now in Project M, the stuff like his dash attack, like his new role, things like that. Things are carried. I hope badly some of those things are carried into like the new Smash Brothers for Wii U and 3DS. Obviously, Sakurai must be aware of Project M at this point. I think there was a great quote by Bill Trinan on Twitter the other day, which is that if it's Smash Brothers related and exists on the internet, Sakurai knows about it.
Yeah, I saw that tweet, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good way to sort of describe Project M, that, yeah, maybe it's not directly influencing, in fact, I'm sure it's not directly influencing the development of the next games, but I think Sakurai is probably aware of it, and
definitely.
I'd be willing to bet that he's probably watched one or two combo videos.
That was something else from the Project M design standpoint, they take things, like, each character has something from their own game that Sakurai seemed to miss out on, like, the opportunity. Donkey Kong's dash attack going off ledges like it does in Donkey Kong Country. Meta Knight's down air being the down air from, I think it's Meta Nightmare from Superstar Ultra. They take things from the games they're from and add them into the game. Sakurai, he could have made Meta Knight way more unique, but all of his moves aren't from his own universe. It's just really weird that he didn't think of doing it, but they did.
Yeah, I mean, and also one thing that I think a lot of people kind of forget is that when you talk about any of the Smash games, they really weren't designed to be competitive fighters. So I think that's one thing PM does have the advantage in when it comes to balancing, because you guys are thinking about it in its competitive aspect. And also, I mean, just the influence of the internet Brawl didn't really have too many patches, if I remember correctly. Especially not any balance patches, but you guys continually,
not.
If any. I didn't think it had any.
Yeah, I don't think it did.
But it had, well, I mean, my main online experience with Brawl was waiting to connect.
Yeah.
Your opponent is disconnected. But you guys certainly had the advantage there where you can make adjustments, you can make changes. I always tell people to compare PM to like a Smash version of League of Legends because it's constantly in development. Mm-hmm. You guys, one, have a big grip on the competitive scene. You understand what players are expecting or looking for. And also, you guys certainly help with events, period. And then in addition, you throw out the whole, lost my train of thought, but it sounded really good in my head.
I think you were sort of just talking about, like, how it's recognized at tournaments. It's recognized at stuff like Apex. Like, you can go to these different events and play it, and you really do get a feel for the community. You can tell, like, there is a finger, you know, on the lifeline when you go to these different right. events. You could taste the lifeblood, as it were.
Because the people that are designing it are tournament players or involved in the tournament scene in one aspect or another. But I think that's also kind of why I have a bit of a strange hope for Smash 4, like a lot of people in the Melee community. I mean, it's sounded like it is going to be a bit of a Brawl Melee amalgam again.
Mm-hmm.
But this time you have Namco in the mix. And of course, I've been playing Tekken since Tekken came out for PlayStation.
Man.
And they certainly know how to balance a game and to make it interesting. So.
And more importantly, too, netcode. That's something very good with. And that's something that Brawl was horrendous at.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. I've been playing some Tekken Resurrection, which is their free-to-play, and it's phenomenal. Meanwhile, I play like Marvel Online or AE, and it's just like, is this possible to play online, or am I just going to play against lag and lose to my opponent?
Yeah. I just think fighting games are just best played in person. I don't know. Online is obviously important to certain people, but I think that's why Melee is so good, is that everybody had to, they had to form a scene, and people got like really close to each other by that. And then the community slowly became closer just because people going to different scenes and stuff.
Definitely.
I got to call out this guy in the stream right now, since we're talking about Bandai. This guy in the stream, his name's Jumpin' Johnny.
Okay, just ignore him. He's a troll.
No, I got to say it. And he just wrote, Namco Bandai developing Smash 4 de facto owns Dragon Ball Z. Goku confirmed for Smash 4.
I mean,
Goku is not going to be.
I've heard rumors, and if Goku's in Smash 4, I will be maining him no matter what. I don't care. He can be the worst character in the game. I will team with Captain Falcon every tournament, and it'll be glorious. We'll lose 2-0, but I know the stream will salute us every time.
Man, obviously no anime character is ever going to make it in, but if one was going to be in, I think you can do worse than Goku and Luffy, I think. Those are good characters.
I mean, they said that Snake would never be in it, they said Sonic would never be in it, and look where we are now.
And actually, while you're here, let me ask you about something, because we had this argument last episode, and Warchamp disagreed with me, a couple of the other guys were on my side, and this has to do with Snake. This has to do with Solid Snake.
Yeah.
Do you think he is returning to the next Super Smash Bros. Game? Why or why not?
I don't think he's returning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Because as much as I would love to see Solid Snake return, I have faith that we will end up with a... of course we already do have Mega Man in there. Thank you, Marquise. We do have Mega Man in there, which, and Wii Fit Trainer, but I'm kind of banking on Bayonetta.
Yeah.
I'm expecting that to be the big surprise.
That's the character I want the most to be in Smash 4.
Above all others, really, you want Bayonetta?
Yeah.
That's tough for me, but I definitely would want to see Bayonetta too. Bayonetta's not Namco though. Bayonetta's Sega, right?
Platinum Games.
Yep.
Platinum's.
Yeah.
So it's like Sega and Nintendo or whatever. So which would make a lot of sense then.
And also, I mean, Bayonetta 2 is going to be a Wii U exclusive, so it's a perfect way to introduce her to the audience.
And honestly, I think if they're going for like a more adult-themed character, I think Bayonetta is the way to go, because as much as I love seeing Snake in Smash Brothers in the old game, like seeing people play him well, not necessarily the character, but just like seeing people play a good Snake, there's something weird about seeing like real-world grenades and RPGs and stuff shooting these characters that we know and love, you know? Whereas Bayonetta could use like hair bullets and all this stuff.
That's the beauty of Smash. I mean, you're Mario fighting Luigi over some strange brotherly rivalry on Pokemon Stadium. This was the argument that everyone had as kids, you know, who would actually win the fight? And that's what Smash embodies.
And now you look at it, and I think that's the case now more than ever, because you have Mario, Mega Man, and Sonic, and probably will be a fourth. I mean, it's just crazy. Just seeing Mega Man and Sonic in the same game is, like, enough. Like, the 2-year-old me is just smiling ear to ear.
I mean, how old are you guys?
23.
Clean 22. Clean.
Everybody
this
is
a Pokemon show.
Yeah, it's 18 plus in here.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm the old man of the group.
You are old man Prague.
But I mean, these were the three biggest faces of my childhood. I mean, not just gaming wise, but remember, all these guys had their TV shows too, and Jaleel White voicing Sonic, and
someone just linked on my Facebook page the other day. They linked the Jaleel White Sonic, the Sonic Says skit, where they're talking about climbing. It's like not climbing in washing machines or something. It's like, Tails, are your brain scrambled? Well, don't climb in a washing machine then. It's like, thanks a lot for the obvious advice. I'll link that on the Facebook page once that's later. But,
and I actually want to riff on something that I see in stream chat from Siege TVW. Where is Smash heading? We saw earlier this year League of Legends saw at the Staples Center, and I think that's a pipe dream for anyone in any gaming community.
That'd be amazing.
Will Smash sell it out? I doubt it. I think it definitely has the capability to be a spectator sport to that degree.
Oh, yeah.
But it certainly is going to need a lot more input from just beyond the community.
One thing I do think that has that's really improved, I guess, with the community is when you look at something like EVO, and you look at the way the community came out for Smash Brothers at EVO. And then on top of that, you look at, I guess, sort of just the community that's built since. The community with Brawl, and with Project M and things like that. I think it's sort of interesting to see how it's built, and especially now, especially with these new games, having them online, I think the connection to find really good players is going to be easier than ever now. So you won't necessarily have like a Korean DJ going to a tournament and putting money matches down. There will just be people who are discovered playing online. People will recognize the gamer tags, and new legends will be born.
Oh yeah, I mean, we're seeing that with Marvel right now, actually.
Right.
You do have a lot of the leftovers, or the good solid sentinels, pun not intended, of the Marvel community from MEC2 sticking around. But at the same time, you saw Cloud805 at EVO, who was kind of jeered by a lot of players as being an online warrior. Then he shows up in person, gets top eight at EVO. It's certainly showing that online play is certainly viable to kind of develop as a player. And I mean, just all the tools now for anyone to expand. I mean, back in the day you had Smashboards, DC++ Hub. Now you can go on Reddit, you can go on YouTube, there's constant Twitch streams. The possibilities are endless, basically.
Yeah, this happened with Project M. Wizrobe was number one in the PM like Wi-Fi ladder, even though Wi-Fi is terrible. And then he came to the tournament and destroyed everybody in Project M.
I think that's sort of the beauty of it, though. I think that's the beauty of games like Smash, is you have these people who come out of seemingly nowhere who just end up dominating the ranks.
Yeah.
But another thing I think is really interesting about the future of Smash is I think it would be in everyone's best interest. First off, I think we all could say that we want Melee back at EVO next year, right?
Of course.
Of course.
I don't know about that, my friend.
But
I don't know if I want to go back to Vegas. I had a horrible time with some strippers and things.
All right, well,
that'll be after the call.
But you know, seeing Melee again at EVO 2014, I think it would be beautiful. And even more so, I think it would be very interesting, knowing that we do have people who are in Treehouse or people who have previously worked for Nintendo, one of which might even be on this podcast, listening to the community and knowing what these people want. I think it would be really interesting to see someone maybe bring a demo of the new games to EVO next year and maybe have the new games playable, right? And maybe demo stations. So while people are playing Melee or in between matches, people could sort of see the evolution of the game, as it were. Like maybe have it on 3DSs that are there, maybe attached to some of those girdles that they have at E3. Or just demo stations like you would see at like a Best Buy or something like that, but all playing Smash Brothers.
Yeah,
you see people like Skullgirls who came into EVO, or Divekick, these games that weren't necessarily on the, what's the word I'm
main
thinking
stage.
Of? Thank you. Yeah, they weren't on the main stage, but they were there and they were present, right? And obviously, I don't think any of us think the next Smash Brothers game is going to be out before the next EVO. Maybe it might be. There was that leaked release date pretty recently, about a May release date.
Yeah. But I think at that point, it's too late to be added to the roster.
Exactly. So, but I think it would definitely be there and be present, and I think it would be an important thing to have the Smash community, who's already gathered there in the first place, to be able to test the game one-on-one and you actually get to play with it hands-on.
Well, Sakurai knows about the documentary because his translator retweeted it.
Yes.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Good stuff.
But just going by that, it's kind of interesting as well, because again, going back to the documentary, this is a cool segue, ladies and gentlemen, and wrapping everything and pulling everything together.
You go.
Back to the Smash doc, again. Since the Smash doc, I've been talking on Twitter with Sundance from MLG. And he said, you know, Nintendo of America sounds like they have some interest in working with MLG again. So just from that, if things do come to fruition, it certainly sounds like Nintendo might want to have a bit of a hand in the competitive scene's direction, which I think would be phenomenal.
Oh,
and
God,
a lot
I
of people
that.
Wanted to begin with. I mean, the last time that Nintendo acknowledged our community, it was saying, okay, you guys can actually have a stream. Those were jokes, XOXO. But I think that's what a lot of people definitely want to see. They want to have Nintendo have a hand in the community of some degree.
Or at least acknowledge the fact. I mean, I think they sort of did by allowing it to go on EVO, you know, but
at least acknowledging it. It came after a different kind of acknowledgement.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, I think that sort of wraps up the talk about the doc and
all right.
EVO and community stuff, Project M. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about? We've got Prague here. It's now your chance to ask a question.
If you guys don't want to do anything.
I have to actually just use the washroom really terribly bad. So I'm going to put Adam on the microphone.
Oh, no, please. Anything but that.
Oh, God. Here we go.
There you go.
Thanks, pal.
What's Adam going to be talking about? Let's hear.
Hello?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, goodness.
I just wanted to say a couple of things that I wasn't really able to say when you guys were talking about the rising of Smash right now. Smash really isn't going to be going anywhere anytime soon. I just recently read...
Get this man off the mic. Get him off the mic.
I just recently read on like my Facebook or something like that that my local monthly tournament had 20 new entrants today. And that's surprising. And I think it's partly due to the Smash doc bringing in some hype and EVO bringing some attention to it too. So it's really great to see newcomers trying to come in into the scene and making a name for themselves.
Yeah, and even by extension of that, the same thing. We've seen a lot of old players coming back because of the documentary. Because, yeah, you know, you can play other games, you can move on with your life and things of that nature, but Smash is kind of like the mafia. The further away you kind of get, further away you're trying to get, you just end up even more deeply entrenched.
Yeah, like today... I saw Chillin' Dude and Chewdat playing that doubles match today at Smash
Bros.
Yeah.
I mean, those are two extremely old legends, as you guys will find out from the Smash doc. They've been around since basically the first hour, I would say. And it's great seeing them again, because everyone leaves at some point. I mean, I just came back from my own hiatus, but everyone comes back eventually, and it's always great to see everyone again. These are family reunions for the community.
Oh, yeah. Especially, in, like we said earlier, like when we were talking about the documentary, it gives a face to some of those people that you see, you know, ranting and raving on Smashboards. You get to see these people. One of the most interesting segments was when Wife was talking about Ken for the first time, and about he just, like, was an asshole. Like, all the things he was saying on Smashboards and everything, you know. That was one of the most interesting parts about the documentary, too. It was about, like, hearing other players. Hello? What's going on? Is that Zeph? Did Zeph just steal the mic from Coast?
Hello?
Oh, my goodness. We were just in the middle. I was talking to Coast about something, and then you come back and you leave him.
Good job. Okay. Zeph. Okay. Yeah, what were you guys talking about? What?
See, now Coast, you ruined it. No.
Wait. What did I ruin?
What? No. 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 I've ruined it. What were you talking to him about? I'll translate. Or translate? Yeah. Sure. Let's translate.
So good at life.
But I guess while we're, I'll do my quick plugs and then I'll stick around for some more questions and stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. So again, my name is. Where can we find you?
Oh, I was gonna do the whole thing. I got a script for this, my friend.
Oh my goodness.
I'm a professional. I should say a professional, but anyway.
All right.
Hello.
There you go. Nice and easy.
My name is Prague. I'm a commentator in the SBM scene. If you saw Top 8 at Evo, I happen to have the honor and pleasure of doing that. You can find me on Twitter at Progducto, Progducto. Also, I'm kind of a veteran of the podcast thing myself, as I'm part of Melee and On Me, which is a bi-weekly Smash Brothers Melee-oriented podcast. You can find us on twitch.tv/MeleeAndOnMe or also on Twitter at MeleeAndOnMe. Also, my next major event will be an Apex qualifier, which is one of the most venerated series on the East Coast, entitled Revival of Melee. This will be the sixth iteration. I'll be doing that in November. And then, of course, if you guys are familiar with New Jersey, my condolences. However, of course, I will be at Apex, which is in the middle of January, basically the big one when it comes to Smash, that and Genesis,
sure,
but we'll see that.
That's something, you just mentioned Apex, and I think that's something we should actually talk about, too. I think we're all going to be at Apex, right?
Yeah.
I think all of Japan time is going to be there.
Oh, not bad. We're going to do a live show, then. Starting here first. Live show from Apex, nice and powerful.
If you guys are going to do a live show, we might have to do some crossbreeding, because I know certainly the Melee It On Me team will be there as well.
Oh my goodness.
Melee It On Me X Japan time, you heard it here first. That's what we're going to be doing. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, Melee I'll definitely talk Japan. To you guys about it.
Melee on Japan.
Japan It On Me?
Japan It On Hey, Japan that on. Actually sounds good. Japan It On Me. That sounds pretty good.
Alright.
Well, Prague, thank you so much, seriously, for joining us this week.
It's always a pleasure and an honor, and anytime you guys need to add a fresh face, you should look for someone else. I'm not as fresh anymore. But,
I don't think it is. And then where can we find the rest of you guys?
You can find us all on Twitter. You can follow Mango at Mango with a zero, then an underscore afterwards. Scar
sure
is at Bobby
tonight.
Scar. He's also the fresh face at twitch.tv, so you guys can find out about some of his journeys over there.
People's Champ?
Yes, sir. People's Champ, capital P, capital C. He is the new global Twitch mode as well. We also have Sheridan, aka Dr. Z, who doesn't use Twitter because he's old. And then you have Cactus, who doesn't tweet very often, who's at Cactus Smash. And finally, if you guys are fans of Melee and PM, you probably saw the Big House 3 2 weeks ago, which was hosted by our very own Juggle Guy, who was at Juggle Rob.
All right.
And then, Zeph, where can we find you?
Oh, at The Real Zeph. That's it. Nowhere else.
Nowhere else. I'm going to say it before Shofu says it, because he always says,
I have a Twitter.
You have a Twitter, stop it. His Twitter is at official Shofu, and you can find Shofu on his channel. And you're probably listening to this on his channel right now too. If you're not on if you are not on the Twitch stream, you are probably listening to this on his channel. And then Coast, where can we find Coast? I don't even. Do people
Official
care?
Shofu too.
All right, there we go. And then you could find me at Rogers Base on Twitter. And actually, you could also find me on my Twitch channel right now too, which is at Rogers Base, which is where you are listening. So all these people who are in the live stream, better follow me. We're going to begin unfollowing me. And then you know what? I'm seeing a lot of people talking about it in the stream. How about we make the hashtag of the week, Japan It On Me?
Oh, I'm not going to say anything against it.
Hello? All right, we gotta hear some support. I can't just be speaking to myself.
Sure.
All right, that's what we're doing. And actually, we also apologize for the lack of Mr. Ricky Cocaine in this segment, as we have no idea where he is right now. So we still don't know.
I killed him. I put him behind bars.
I actually spoke to him before he got here. He said he really, really liked the Smash documentary, but he wanted to do something that wasn't mentioned in it. He did want to talk to Ken, find out how to live in Africa, and I think he's there right now, wrestling an antelope and trying to get its meat, so we'll see about that.
Someone is a listener of our show! we gotta bring Baba Tunde back, wherever he is.
He died!
He didn't die, we gotta bring in a new character.
Baba Tunde died from eating a hamburger cheese sandwich.
That's right, hamburger cheese sandwich.
What?
Oh my goodness.
I don't even want to know.
No, you don't. Well, you go back and listen to the last episode. All right, well, thank you guys so much for listening. Oh my goodness.
What?
It's the whole show.
I had to go outside because my food was here.
Oh.
You were playing Pokemon is what you were doing.
No.
The entire episode.
I mean, I was, but that's not why I wasn't here.
Not why. All right, well, guys, you can catch us again in 2 weeks. We'll be talking about Miiverse posts and things like that. I don't know. I was going to plan to just have this as like a segment at the end of the show, but this actually went the full hour.
Yeah.
Length. So I think this is going to be the show for the week. I think this was really good, especially to have Prague on. I mean, special edition right here. So I think works pretty well too for as our double digit episode. So we'll be back again in 2 weeks with episode 11. Hopefully Ricky will be back from his trek away from the States. And we'll be able to talk about, and honestly, you know, people are probably going to talk about this in the comments or whatever. I think it's okay that we skipped to the Miiverse pictures this week. I think that's all right, because
there was really nothing.
Yeah.
There was nothing for like 3 weeks. And hopefully, since it'll be a month by that point, we might have a new character by then. So here's hoping episode 11, we might be talking about a new character and new reveals. There you go. You're ready here first. Next week, new character. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
All right.
Before we go.
Huh? What?
Before we go.
Yeah.
Shouts to Roy, me too, and Project M.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There it is.
Project M game.
There it is. Shoutouts to Roy and Mewtwo. Good night, everybody.
Shoutouts to Killing Coast.
All right.
Oh, all right. Goodness, no.
Thank you.